Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How's it going, everybody, and welcome back to District Baseball. You can follow us on Twitter at DistrictBSB, and you can follow us on TikTok and YouTube at District Baseball. You can follow me on Twitter at Reverse with two R's, two S's. But yes, it's just me solo casting. It's just Trey this week. So if you're wondering where Nick is, well, he won his district championship as head coach. So now he's got to prep for the regionals. And so he's got a bunch of stuff going on this week. He wasn't able to watch much ball, but I did. So I'm going to be recapping it all for you, bringing you guys the most important topics only, as always. But I think we're going to go ahead and kick it off immediately with a 3-up, 3-down. All right, kicking off this 3-up, 3-down recap, we're actually going to be heading out to Colorado because it is Rocktober in May. Yeah, I know, rare that we talk good about the Rockies at all. But they went on a 7-game win streak, which, they don't do very often, which brought their record up to a grand total of 16-28 from 9-28, which is, yikes, bad, really bad start. And then now it is actually 16-31, excuse me, because they just got swept by the Giants, but they did win 7 games in a row in that stretch. And, that is basically because they started pitching finally. They have the worst ERA in baseball, and yes, that is going to be affected by Coors, but also their bad pitching and roster building certainly does not help. But they actually did not allow any game in that stretch for the, opposing team to score 4 or more runs. So good on the Rockies. They actually gave their fans something to cheer about for once. But heading to the negatives, our first down is going to be, it's actually more of a positive thing, but the Great Wall, the Wall of Baltimore, was actually conquered. And I'm not just talking about, you know, a big power-hitting righty who hits a pull-side homer. No. Talking about a lefty going opposite field over the wall. And not even just to the very corner where it's still doable. I'm talking about the deepest part of this wall. Gunnar Henderson went 410 feet, dead left center field, over the deepest part of the park, of the tallest part of the wall. Basically, as far as you can hit it to the opposite field. And, kind of ironic that Gunnar Henderson took down the wall. But he was the one who conquered that wall. I'm really not sure how many players could do that. Maybe Juan Soto, maybe Yordan Alvarez, you know, big lefties that could go oppo. That's impressive. That's really impressive from Henderson. He's been very good this year. But heading back into the positives, we're going with long at-bat home runs. There was a couple on the same day. I believe it was Saturday. 10-plus pitch ABs. and then ending with homers. That's rare. It's very cool. I always love a good grinded out AB that ends with a big spectacular moment. This time it was William Contreras. He had a 13-pitch at-bat versus Justin Verlander that ended in a homer. And Jose Ramirez, the most underrated player in baseball, with a 12-pitch at-bat against Bailey Ober that ended with a homer as the Guardians swept the Twins. But heading into the negatives, this is a real negative, actually. Well, depending on who you ask, I guess. The Mets. I guess if you're a Mets hater, you really like this, but they blew it. They blew it big time against a really, really bad team in the Miami Marlins. They were up by 4 runs coming into the ninth inning, and Edwin Diaz just has not, he's just not been that guy. He's just not that guy, pal, right now. He's got a 5.5 ERA. He's looking more like his 2019 self than anything recently coming off that injury, which is, you know, that's a bummer, but it's still early. But he has blown 3 of his 8 save opportunities, so he's going to need to figure it out. Josh Bell was the one who tied it, and of course Diaz did his patented point, and you know when Diaz points, only bad things are going to happen, so unfortunate for him. But back to the positives, last week we talked a bit about Paul Skeens and how he had a pretty good outing, but nothing crazy. Well, he kind of had a crazy outing against the Cubs. Back-to-back starts versus the Cubs, that can be difficult for guys to do. Didn't look difficult for him. 6 innings, didn't allow a single hit. The only thing that was really keeping him from finishing the game was his pitch count. He did have some long counts, but he finished them off with strikeouts for the most part. He had 11 Ks and only 1 walk. Really nothing was even hit hard against him, and Pirates would end up winning that game, I do believe, actually. I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure they won that game. So good for Paul Skeens getting his first win. But the big blow this week is an unfortunate injury to a young KBO star who came over to MLB. It is Jung-Hoo Lee. Trying to make a play, just jumped directly into his shoulder directly into the wall out in center field in San Francisco, and he was not able to recover from that, and it's going to be a torn labrum, and it's going to require season-ending surgery to repair. And that's a huge bummer because he's already had some, I think he's had some shoulder problems before. He had an ankle issue, and it's a bummer because he's really fun to watch. And I felt like he was on the verge of breaking out with the bat, as he's already been breaking out with the glove. But that's unfortunate that he's going to be out for the season. That really hurts the Giants as well. But that was 3 up, 3 down. Moving right along, we are going to be talking about the Yankees for our second segment today, because they were the first team in baseball to reach 30 wins. They are currently, the updated standings, totally not just typing right now, 33-15. And they are first in the American League East above the Baltimore Orioles by 2 games. And really, it's been, you know, you expected Juan Soto to be that guy, and he has been, and he just continues to be that guy. He had 2 homers yesterday. But the big difference as well in the offense is Aaron Judge has figured it out, as we pretty much expected. I talked about it last week briefly in 3 Up, 3 Down, about how good he was hitting. It has not slowed down. He went deep again today, and it's just the way that he rocketed up all the leaderboards was really funny, because he had a 725 OPS on May 2nd. It is currently May 19th. May 2nd, 725 OPS, which is right around average, maybe even slightly below average at this point. And a sub 400 slugging percentage. Aaron Judge, he had a 393 slugging percentage. That's crazy. And in 2 weeks, he's completely turned it around. He's got a 981 OPS. That ranks very highly in baseball now. That is probably top 10 at this point. And his slugging percentage went almost all the way to 600, 581. Like, it's just crazy how quickly he did that. And it makes sense because he can be a streaky hitter. That's definitely true. But normally he's streaky good and not streaky bad. But he was streaky bad to start this year, but now he's been streaky good. And you just know when he's locking in, because he's starting to hit everything to the opposite field. And normally, you know, a lot of guys, you don't necessarily want that because you lose a little bit of power going to the opposite field. But not when you're 6'7", Aaron Judge. He can pretty much go wherever he wants. And I prefer him hitting to the opposite field. Or dead center field. Center field, right center field, right field, any of those, because it's just... It seems like it's just a little poke for him. Doesn't even not even just Yankee Stadium. You know, he can go out to right field pretty much anywhere. And when he is just mashing ball, like he mashes long home runs to the opposite field, and that's the difference. Like he's not just sneaking them out there. Like he's crushing balls to the opposite field, and that's when you know he's really locking in. But more importantly, honestly, has been the Yankees pitching staff. I think I was higher on them than most people, especially the bullpen, which a lot of people were down on heading into the season, this Yankees bullpen. I really don't get why. And I, you know, I'm taking my victory lap. I was right. Clay Holmes has a zero ERA. He's the only qualified pitcher with a zero ERA. And Luke Weaver has been a great find for them. He is just eating innings out of that bullpen with a solid 2.25 ERA. But the starters... This group of starting pitchers is not, like, you. I'm just going to read this group. Nestor Cortez, Luis Gil, Clark Schmidt, Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman. That does not strike fear into your heart. Be honest. Does it? It doesn't. Maybe they should, because this team has been extremely good, considering that they don't even have Gerrit Cole yet. Cortez probably had the roughest start to the season out of all of them, but he's really turned it around and he's eating innings. He's up to 60 innings with a 3.56 ERA. It was way higher early in the season, so he's come around. But Carlos Rodon has been able to be manageable. 3.31 ERA is pretty good. He has at least been solid, because it was in, I'm sure Yankees fans will agree that his showing last year was less than convincing that he was going to be able to pull this off. He still has the walks are a problem. The whip is a problem. There's definitely some issues, but his four-seam fastball has been an elite pitch. So he's got to find the slider again that he's really not had, but the four-seamer has been good enough to get away with it. Marcus Stroman has been okay. The analytics don't really love him, but that's kind of always been his game. He's not really a FIP merchant. He's more of a pitch to contact kind of guy. The ground ball rate is still well over 50%, so that's a good thing for him as well. But Luis Gil and Clark Schmidt for that matter, but Luis Gil has been just an otherworldly revelation out of nowhere. I feel like he's been kind of in that outside looking in until this season in that Yankees rotation, and the only reason he got in was because of the Cole injury. But now he's definitely not the first guy I drop out of this rotation. It's tough to pick a guy here. I mean, Clark Schmidt has also been an elite starter so far with a 2.49 ERA in 50 innings. That is getting it done, to put it simply. So I'm really not sure what they're going to do when Cole comes back. Will they go six-man? That's a potential thing that they could do. Do they put one of these guys in the bullpen? At that point, my first thought would be Schmidt, but I don't really want him in the bullpen right now. I want him starting my games. So I might go six-man rotation if I'm Boone. But then again, you don't necessarily want to have Gerrit Cole. Like, if you have Gerrit Cole, you want him pitching every fifth day. So I don't know. Maybe they'll have some kind of hybrid situation there. But it's kind of a good problem for them to have. And it was a problem I wasn't expecting them to have, especially in the starting rotation. The bullpen I was personally expecting to be pretty good, but the starting rotation is well overperformed, and I'm hoping for Yankees fans' sake, at least, that they continue to do so, because if the regression does hit, that's going to be an issue. But I do think that this is still a solid group. When you add Gerrit Cole, all of a sudden it looks a lot deeper. So good on the Yankees starting pitchers. But we're going to be heading to a team that I was not expecting to be good, that is just completely blowing all my expectations out of the water, the Cleveland Guardians. And I don't think I'm alone in saying that. I don't think anyone really had them coming out on top of this division or I mean, maybe some people, but this the division, the AL Central as a whole has just been way better than everyone kind of expected. Like, the Guardians, they are winning this division. Get the updated standings real quick. Because I believe the Royals are currently a game back. Game and a half back of the 30-17 Guardians. 30 wins. 30-17 for the Guardians. Was not ready for that at all. They've been really, really good at home this year. 15-6 at home. We brought them up a couple weeks back on a contender versus pretender segment. We did it on an audio-only podcast. I don't even know if that was on YouTube, but for our audio-only listeners, if you remember that. And I think we picked the Guardians as pretenders. We might have been wrong. This team continues to play well, and they're not just beating bad teams anymore. They're also beating the teams that are somewhat good that are on their schedule. They've beaten Seattle. They beat in a series. They beat Texas in a series. They swept the Twins. I believe they're 5-0 versus the Twins this year. They took down Boston, I believe, as well. And they competed hard with the Yankees. That was not an easy series for the Yankees to win. So at this point, now that they've played some more teams and played somewhat well, like, they haven't been swept this year, I don't think. And I think they also played 3 against the Braves. Did they? They didn't get swept in that, right? Or am I wrong? Could be wrong. Braves. No, they beat them once. And they played tough. So they are not an easy team to play right now. And I don't think anyone wants to play them because they're super annoying, as they were in 2022, although it is a little bit different. They are not built as much on pitching and base running. They are scoring runs, and that's a huge difference from that team, because that team had a negative run differential, I do believe, heading into the playoffs. This team does not have a negative run differential. They have a plus 56 run differential. That, I believe, is top 5 in baseball. That's a good sign. Normally, you kind of look at a team and how they play in one-run games and how many runs they score, how many runs they allow to see. Are they actually good, or are they just getting lucky? And I think that there's reason to believe here that the Guardians are actually good. Now, I think they're definitely getting some overperformance from guys that are probably not going to continue to perform like this. Like, David Fry is not going to have a 185 WRC plus at the end of the season, I don't think. But there is some really good, promising situations here. Stephen Kwan has found his contact bat again. He was solid last year. Nothing bad. I think he was a perfectly average hitter. But you definitely want him at the top of that order to be more than an average hitter, and he has been this year, although he's currently hurt. Andres Jimenez doing it again with the glove, but also the bat is slightly above average. Jose Ramirez, I mentioned him as the most underrated player in baseball. He's still doing his thing, although the defense isn't loving him right now. I'm sure that will be fine. And then Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor is really interesting to me. He's a free agent coming up soon. I don't know if it's after this year or the next year, but teams are going to be in on him because he's a legit hitter. I didn't realize how good of a hitter he was going to turn out to be. But at this point, the way he's gotten a lot more consistent as well. That's definitely been something that's been a knock on him in previous years. This year, he's been fairly consistent. Like, he's been a 140 WRC plus all year. It's not just been like a week here where he's hit like 4 home runs, although he's had some good weeks. It's been more spread out and more even. And I think that Guardians fans appreciate that a lot, the steady presence. But I don't know what to make of this team. They're not pitching incredible. They're doing fine. They're kind of middle of the pack. But when they were that 2022 team, when they won that division, they were one of the best pitching teams in baseball. So I'm curious if that is going to sustain. I don't think they're going to sustain this pace of winning. But the offense is way better than I thought they were going to be. And they're getting production from their farm system. So who's to say they can't bring more guys up? Maybe their player development has become more at an elite level than we've even realized. Although I'd like to see more pitching success. I mean, they have good. They're good young pitchers. Bibee today had a really good outing. Logan Allen had a good outing yesterday. They need more from those guys, but they can probably get it. I feel like both of those guys just haven't had the best of luck so far this year. So if those guys can lock it in May and June, you might be looking at this team, you know, 15 games over 500, around the halfway point, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, are the Guardians buyers? So really interesting. The Central divisions in general have been the most interesting to me so far. I don't know if that's just me, but they've been the more interesting to me than the East or West in both leagues, which that was not on my bingo card heading into this season. But you got the Brewers way overperforming what we thought they were going to be. You got the Guardians way overperforming the Royals. The Twins had a crazy win streak. Then, you know, the Cubs are a big favorite over there. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of moving parts. But I like this Guardians squad, the way they've been playing recently. I still don't think they end up winning this division, but they're starting to change. They're starting to convert me a little bit. Okay, like if over here was zero and over here is 10, I'm 50%. I'm kind of like, I'm intrigued. So there we go.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good for the Guardians, but moving into another AL Central team and player, this is Eric Fetty. So our fourth topic today, we're talking about Eric Fetty because, one, he's been really good this year. I don't think you can really argue that. 2.6 ERA in 52 innings. He's improved his strikeouts. He's improved his walk rate. Pretty much done everything that you would expect from a guy trying to make it back into the big leagues after heading to Korea. And he's just an interesting story, and there's other cases like this, like Nick Martinez, for example, a guy that went to the KBO when he was struggling and came back and really has made a name for himself and impacted some playoff teams as well. So there's definitely something to be said about some of these players going overseas and finding new ways to get outs. And with Fetty, it came with a complete overhaul to his repertoire, you know. And he was on the Nats, he threw a curveball a lot. It was more of a slurve, if anything. And he threw a changeup. And he has ditched those two pitches. He is now throwing a sweeper and a splitter along with a sinker and cutter. It has really helped his tunneling. And that splitter is disgusting. It's one of the nastiest splitters in baseball right now. His expected numbers for this splitter are a 192 expected batting average, a 243 expected slug, and a 224 expected wOBA, with a 27% hard hit rate on that pitch. That is nothing. That is those are so little. Those numbers are so small. And it's funny because his actual run value on that pitch isn't that great, but I'm like, this is the pitch. This is the pitch that's setting up everything, is the splitter that Eric Fetty has found. And it is not a pitch that he had when he was in D.C. And another thing that he's done is he's really improved his command of the edges of the strike zone. I noticed this his last start. He was all over the corners. Everything was corner. He was not leaving things out over the middle of the plate very often, which was a big deal for him. Is that he had a lot of pitch movement back in the day, but he couldn't command it as well as he needed to. And now he has that movement still, but he is commanding it in a very, very much better way. And this, there's a big conversation, I think, to be had about getting innings from other places, whether it's from a foreign league, like a signing like Shota Imanaga or Yoshinobu Yamamoto or another guy like that, or if it's a guy like Eric Fetty or a guy like Nick Martinez who has to go overseas and then reinvents themselves, essentially. And, hey, I've become a better pitcher. I want to come back to MLB. Sign me. That's another way to get more innings. Now you also have relievers turned back into starters. Jordan Hicks, Seth Lugo. These are relievers who have become starters and are excelling. And it's just, it's a whole conversation because of the pitching injury epidemic, and honestly, not just pitching injuries this year. I feel like this year is just the year of the injury in general so far. But when you're just trying to, as a team, as a GM, if you're the GM of a team, you're looking around, you're saying, I need to get innings. Where am I going to get my innings? If I can take a reliever who was giving me 60 innings total and extrapolate that over 180 innings, why would I not? And it's just funny because, like Seth Lugo, for example, Seth Lugo has already pitched more innings than he did in his last full reliever season for the Royals this year. It's May 19th. He's already thrown more innings. That is crazy. And his effectiveness is at an all-time high as well. Like, these guys have found something with turning relievers back into starters. And if you can get those good innings from your guy, like, I mean, it's just, you're just trying to find enough innings to get you through the season, and I feel like teams might start experimenting with converting more relievers into starters, because it's like, it's already tough enough to keep your starters with you for a whole season, whether they get injured or whether they are ineffective through the third time through or something like that. Like, if I can get my reliever to throw me four or five good innings instead of just the one, I'm probably taking that. So it's just kind of an interesting conversation to think about where all of the innings are going to come from on a major league roster nowadays. It's not just this, just, you know, standard sign a free agent starter or bring up a starter from my farm system. There's a lot of different ways teams are operating now, with openers, with, you know, swingmen, with, you know, chaining relievers together to make one starter, to making relievers starters in general. There's just a lot to think about with that stuff. And also with Eric Fetty specifically, trade candidate. The White Sox are going nowhere. Do they move him early? I would think they might want to move him early because he's looking really good right now, but you never know. He might this could be a flash in the pan type thing, although I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. But let's head into our last segment, pause or panic. This is pause or panic. I have selected four teams that I wanted to talk about that I think are kind of on the edge of, do you wait? Do you have patience with them? Or is it a full-blown, blow it up, this team is bad? And I think that these teams with similar records have very different ways that they're going. So let's go ahead and start with the first team from the National League. It's the Diamondbacks. Do you pause or do you panic on the D-backs? For me, I'm pausing. I'm keeping it simple. I'm having patience. I think that this team's going to turn it around. I think that they can do it. Their offense has been legitimately good, and that's without Corbin Carroll really finding it yet. You got to imagine he's going to figure it out at some point. He's a 5-WAR player from last year. There's no way he goes an entire season while just continuously slumping this hard. I think he finds something with his offensive game, and he adds it to an already great offense featuring Ketel Marte, Christian Walker, Jock Peterson. Eugenio Suarez needs to step it up, but I do like him in the long run. And Lourdes Gurriel Jr. obviously has been really good for them too. Their bigger issue has been the pitching side of things, and it's mostly due to health, I would say. There's definitely some issues with, Jordan Montgomery hasn't been elite yet. Ryan Nelson has not been good at all for them, and he's kind of been a fill-in because, Merrill Kelly's on the injured list right now. Eduardo Rodriguez is still on the injured list right now. Brandon Pfaadt has been pretty good. He's starting to pitch a little bit better. Gallen is Gallen. He's going to be fine. But you're really just looking for this rotation to get fully healthy, and I feel like they'd be good again. Gallen at the top, Eduardo Rodriguez filling in, Jordan Montgomery, I'm still giving him some time. It's same thing with kind of Blake Snell, where they didn't have a real spring training, so I'll give him some more time. He's not pitching terrible or anything. He's pitching fine. But they're going to need some help pitching-wise at some point this season. Maybe that has to be through a trade if they can't get healthy. I'm saying if they get healthy. They were about to get healthy, it seemed like, and then Merrill Kelly got hurt, so maybe they need to consider a trade deadline move to boost their pitching. But I think with the way the offense is going right now, I feel like they're going to be okay. And the National League as a whole is not very good right now, so they're still pretty close to a wild card spot. But let's go into the other NL team I want to talk about, which is the Reds. And for the Reds, am I going to pause or am I panicking? Hit the button. It is panic time, everybody. This team is in trouble, and I don't really know how you fix it, honestly. They're very top-heavy right now. It's pretty much just Ellie De La Cruz. It's Ellie De La Cruz or bust right now for the Reds. And I'm not sure that's going to lead them to many wins. He's great, but you can't win with one player in MLB. It's just how it works. They're not getting contributions from basically anywhere else. I mean, basically nowhere else. Their next best hitter is Tyler Stevenson. That's not what you want to hear. So they're players that I thought were going to take a step forward are just not doing it. Jonathan India is not. He's just not that guy anymore. 83 WRC plus. Candelario hasn't hit yet. Free agent signing that just hasn't panned out quite yet. I think he'll be fine eventually as well, but not yet, and that's what we're talking about. Spencer Steer, that's where they're going to need more production. He's about an average hitter right now, and he's not a great defender. So if he's going to stick around, he needs to start producing with the bat like he did last year. And it's just a lot. It's just a lack of slug up and down this team. I mean, I figured you'd be looking at, guys with boosted slug because they're playing in Great American Ballpark and it helps your slug. But if anything, they've only got two guys with a slug over 400 that are qualified, and not what you want when you're the Reds and you play in a hitter's ballpark and your pitching staff isn't all that great, although they've been better than the hitters, which is the opposite of what I thought. I thought the pitching staff was going to be the bigger issue, the offense has been just horrendous. They have so many players that are in negative F4 this year already. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 position players that are negative F4. That's not good. It's not good. And I don't think they have much coming to help from the farm. Christian Encarnacion Strand, he's supposed to be a guy from the farm that was supposed to be their next big thing. He's done absolutely nothing. Noel V. Marte is obviously suspended, so that's not going to help anybody. And most of their moves that they made have not panned out. Santiago Espinal has been horrendous. Mike Ford has been horrendous. Bubba Thompson has been horrendous. It's just going down the list. You know, their pitching is at least promising. There's something there. But there's two other teams in the NL Central right now that are just so much better than them. And maybe three if you count the Pirates, who I think might be better than them right now as well, which is not necessarily good company. The Pirates have not been playing well either. So I'm panicking on the Reds. I think that they might not have it this year and might be looking towards next year potentially. But let's head to the American League and pick it up with the Astros. Oh, man, 10 days ago, I might have panicked on this team, but I think we're going to pause on the Astros because, again, like the D-backs, this team's offense has been really good, and not just really good, but kind of elite. They have not slowed down at all. That has not been a problem for the Astros. The big problem has been their pitching, which is the worst in baseball currently by F4, which is just crazy to think about in general. The Astros, who are, you know, I'm thinking about 2019, they were built on that pitching rotation. They don't have a real rotation right now. And, you know, injuries have hurt them, but also not being proactive in free agency and not really making the moves that need to be made. They re-signed Verlander. That's great and all. He hasn't been great this year so far. But that's really all they did. I mean, they didn't do that much. And it hasn't really panned out. And they got Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia on the injured list, who I'm not even sure comes back this year. This is the team I'm looking at. If you want to talk trades, this is still pretty early for trades, but the Astros don't intend to go quietly. They do not intend to sell. Their GM said so. He said that this is a really good team. They're going to buy. I don't even know if it's going to matter what their record is. But they've improved it to a point where they're at least kind of there. They can see the wild card spot. Like, it's at least within range. And because of that, I can't drop this team yet. And as much as I'd love to, that core group is still there and they're still too good. I mean, they do need help. They really need pitching help, but I bet you they go in on some pitching help in at the trade deadline or before. But right now, they're playing pretty well. They went on a little 7-game win streak. I believe they're like 8-2 in their last 10. Kyle Tucker is playing at an MVP level. And I'm just not willing to call it for them yet, as much as I'd like to. I want this dynasty to be over because I don't particularly like the Astros, and most people don't. But it's not over yet. Not quite. I don't think so, at least. And finally, our last team we're going to talk about. This is brutal. This one's brutal. Blue Jays. Panic. Panic, 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 panic. Oh my God, I'm panicking so hard if I'm the Blue Jays right now. This offense is bad. And it at this point, it's kind of an organizational approach that I think is the issue here. This team, they don't pull the baseball. They just don't do it. They don't like to do it. They like to go to the opposite field. And I think that in some cases, that's cool. But, like, not you got to hit home runs to win this league now. It's just how it is. Like, you can't win without the home run ball in 2024, in modern Major League Baseball. I don't think it can be done. I don't think you can do it. And it's just, it's not happening for Toronto. They're not hitting homers. They're not scoring runs. They're not even pitching well. That was their, they've had a great rotation for like 3 years. That basically the reason why we're always talking about the Blue Jays is because of that rotation. Now they've got some guys pitching okay. You say Kikuchi, actually. I'll bring him up because he's been excellent for them. Best season of his career easily so far. But, you know, Jose Berríos has been pretty good, but the underlying numbers are not favorable, and Chris Bassitt has been a disaster. Although Alek Manoah, he's had two good starts in a row. Interesting development. But it doesn't matter because they can't hit either. This team is not doing anything well right now, and it's not even all their fault here that I'm pushing this panic button, because their division is ridiculous. There's no way that this Blue Jays team can snag a wild card spot right now. They've got four teams in their division that are better than them. So do the math. That's too many. They can't possibly make the wild card unless they jump one of them. And they're not better than the Rays. They're not better than the Red Sox. They're certainly not better than the Yankees or Orioles. And then you have to compete with wild card teams, like potentially this KC Royals team that is way better than the Blue Jays and way more exciting and fun. The Blue Jays look dead, okay? I think they need to shake up a manager or something. I mean, managers don't do that much in the grand scheme of the entire season, but like, there's no energy, there's no spark, there's no joy, there's no, like, I watched them play a few times this year, but I watched them in the perfect game that they almost got perfect game, they didn't, but you know, I've watched them this past week, and it's not good. It's it's bad body language. It's guys not hustling. It's bad. And I'm sure Blue Jays fans are feeling that as well. And I don't know what you do here, because you got guys that are about to be free agents that are gonna want to get paid. Do you trade Vladdy? Do you trade Bo Bichette? Do you trade some of these guys that are about to try and get paid? Like, or do you keep this core that has done nothing but underperform? I don't know. And you know, I'm sure Blue Jays fans want to keep their homegrown guys. That's always a thing that fans want. But from me, an outsider perspective, I'm looking at this team as a seller at the deadline, and potentially a seller in as one of those big guys. Like, they could pay them. They probably could keep them all. But do you really want to at this point? I don't know. I don't know if I want to keep all those guys. I might want to go get a different guy, because clearly this same core hasn't figured it out. So that's another one. I talked about the Cardinals last week. The Blue Jays are in a similar boat where it might be time to consider selling. Hopefully I don't get too many people angry at me for saying that. But they're just not playing well, and I figure that might be a smart move for the future. You're in a really good division that you're not going to win. You're probably not going to make the wild card. It's just something to consider. But regardless, those are all hypotheticals. We'll have to wait and see how that ends up happening, because it is only May 19th. There's still time for all of these teams. Anything is possible right now. But it is starting to, you're starting to have to think about it a little bit. But that's going to be the end of the episode, guys. Hopefully this will be the last one I'll be doing solo for the MLB versions. And Nick will be back next week. If not, maybe I'll find a different co-host forever. Sorry, Nick. We're finding a new guy. It's over for you. No, I'm just kidding. But we'll see. We'll keep you posted on our Twitter. So go ahead and give us a follow. Give us a follow on TikTok. All that good stuff. Like, subscribe. And yeah, we will see you guys in the next episode.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is back. Score up to 70% off everything home. And end summer with can't-miss surprise flash deals. All with fast shipping right to your doorstep. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 3rd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.